Do you have a dilemma with Darwin, or can Diaz be our darling? Plus, we analyse fixtures and ask, could it be time to chance it with Chelsea and swoop for Spurs? Hello, welcome back to the FPL pod. Your game week 3 preview awaits, but wow, it was another topsy-turvy game week 2, wasn't it? Just two passes all game for Erling Haaland. Harry Kane scored, of course he did, in a crazy battle at the Bridge. And then, of course, it all ended with a Darwin Núñez red card and a Luis Diaz stunner. Not too much for us to talk about then. Hello, as always, to Sam Bonfield and Julian Laron. And hello to you as well, Ian Irving, broadcaster for the Premier League and The Athletic. It's good to have you back on the podcast. I've got to be honest, though, I've not seen you all summer. And now I've seen you twice in 2 days. I bumped into you yesterday at Everton as well, where you were speaking to a bit of an FPL, well, someone that's of FPL interest, I would say.
Yeah, Nathan Patterson, a good option, isn't he? 4.0. I didn't actually talk to him about FPL, though. So probably should have done that, shouldn't I, coming on the podcast today?
That's a mistake, Ian. You've got to ask him.
Yeah, I'll have to pull my socks up for next time. Come on.
I was going to say, glad you've done your prep the day before the pod and all that. Anyway, how is your FPL season going so far, albeit it's in its infancy?
Good so far, yeah. I'm pretty pleased. I stand on 138 points, so it's an overall rank of inside the top million, which doesn't mean a great deal at this point, of course, but pretty solid scores. No major disappointments, which is usually the thing that starts nagging you at this sort of time. I've had Jesus, I've had Salah that first week, I've had Haaland both weeks. So yeah, I can't complain really. Martinelli's been my gem so far, really. I had 2 free transfers this week. I've already made them nice and early because one of the things I wanted to do this year was be a bit more aggressive early on with transfers because I never do that. So yeah, I'm actually quite content sat here now, which is quite nice.
You're a beacon of positivity. I'm not used to this from you. And we'll talk about those transfers a little bit later in the podcast because I'm intrigued to see what you've done. Sam, I've got to come to you first, out of you and Jules, because we're also videoing this podcast for clips on social media and people watching wonder, what on earth has happened to your house? Have you been transformed into a wizard's cave? Or where are you?
I'm in Legoland in Denmark with the kids at the moment. So this is commitment for you, Ian. You don't ask about FPL in your interviews, but I pod from holiday. So if you can see any random wizards going on in the background, I'm in Billund in Denmark right now.
I hope you still had time to keep an eye on that FPL team, though. How was game week 2?
Actually, game week 2 was good for me this week in standard Sam fashion. Game week 1 went badly. Game week 2, much, much better. Still managed to bench an absolute load of points, though, because all week I was back and forth about who to play. Should I play Bailey? Should I play Trippier? Then Gerrard's beautiful comments about Leon Bailey towards the back end of the week. I was like, I can't bench him now at home against Everton in the opening game of the season. I better play him and bench Trippier. Well, wasn't that a mistake when Leon Bailey then got benched? And Trippier, of course, kept his clean sheet and picked up a bonus point as well. So 7 points for him on the bench, 7 points for Williams on the bench. That was a little bit painful, particularly when I had the 1 point for Bailey and 1 point for Rashford on the pitch.
Jules, if we're going to talk about benches, I noticed you had one particularly big score on your bench, albeit you did have a good game week 2 again.
Yeah, not bad. 63 points, which is 130 in total. But yeah, I've got Dean Henderson, 14 points on the bench, and Nico Williams, of course, as well. Like Sam, I thought about benching Bailey and starting Nico Williams. I felt Forest would have a good game at home, and again, that back five, et cetera, et cetera. And then in the end, I kept Bailey for the same reason as Sam did, and I was gutted when he didn't start. I was gutted when he came on, and I was even more gutted when Forest did so well on the Sunday. But this is the game.
I feel like in the interest of balance, I should also admit that I started Leon Bailey over Nico Williams as well. And then I found myself at work, surrounded by a few ex-pros, kind of, I don't know, what the opposite to a cheer when Leon Bailey came on. And then everyone turns around and looks at you as if to say, why do you care that an Aston Villa player is coming onto the pitch? And you're like, you just don't get it. This is the life of an FPL manager. No.
The 1 point cameo, it's the stuff we all dread, isn't it?
Yes, because then you know whoever was your first sub. Instantly, I didn't even put Nico Williams as my first sub. So that kind of made it a little bit less.
I never even considered playing him. He was second sub on my bench and I didn't even blink. So I haven't got the same rueful feeling that you three have got, I think.
Okay, well, let's park that in game week 2 and talk a little bit more about the better things, although I've got to start with one of the worst things, because that red card at Anfield for Núñez, he was one of the most wanted players in FPL going into game week 2. Now he has a 3-match ban. What does this mean for managers that bought him, Jules?
Well, a bit of a nightmare to start with, because it all makes sense to try to bring him in. And you see before the red card in that first half, or the first half hour in that Palace game, that he could easily have scored one, maybe even two. And yet that lack of efficiency, which is not a big deal because everybody misses chances, was nowhere near as bad as obviously the red card. And, you know, we always say about a new signing, a player like him coming to the Premier League, that they're often in terms of adaptation, or you need to, you know, to get used to playing in this league. I think Joachim Andersen gave Darwin Nunez a good welcome in the Premier League here, because he got into his head, and in the end, that red card, which is terrible, really, the reaction and then the three-match ban and everything that he meant for Liverpool, even if they salvage a point in the end, is everything that we've always said. So now you have to think about another option if you are Darwin, and losing him for three games is a lot.
Is it as simple as we have to sell him, Ian?
Yes. For me, at this stage of the season, he's a 9 million asset. That's a lot of money sat on your bench and burning a hole on there for three game weeks. There's lots of great options as well. There's lots of creative ways you can use that money in midfield and defence, with some really big hitting defenders doing well at the start of this season. So just don't keep him. The other factor as well is, yes, it will affect the next three game weeks, of course, because of the suspension. But you have to bear in mind that was his first start in the Premier League too. So I think there was some concern that he might not have been completely up to speed heading into the start of the season. Of course, Firmino got injured, which meant that he got his opportunity. So I don't think he's absolutely guaranteed to go straight back into the Liverpool starting lineup either. So you might find that it doesn't just affect the next three game weeks. It could end up affecting four, maybe five. So yes, I'd sell him, definitely. And I'd have a look at Jesus if you've not got him. And obviously that gives you a bit more money. And the likes of even Tony started well. Mitrovic started well in game week one, less so in game week two. But I think he's still a good option. And then you can use that money elsewhere. But I wouldn't blink. I'd just sell him.
As disappointing and as frustrating as it will have been, Sam, for managers who did have Nunes in that game, watching him get sent off, I also want to point out here, going into that game, I had Diaz. My other half had Nunes. There was 1 point between us. So, of course, when Nunes got sent off and Diaz scored, I was like, this is FPL dreamland right there. Not that I ever want to see a player getting sent off, of course. But the one thing I was envious of, my other half after, although he then had a problem to sort out, the different ways he could go in terms of downgrading, and then he could upgrade another player in his team. If you want to look at it as an opportunity, it does present some quite interesting ways of, as Ian said, adapting your team.
Oh, for sure. There's so many players in that forward position. And at the moment, I was saying to Lee the other day, I feel like in seasons gone by, there's been maybe two forwards at best that I've really wanted. And the third spot's been like, okay, I'll just find somebody that can fill that in, be it a budget player or somebody that actually doesn't play at all to free up the money. But this season, there's four or five really good candidates in that forward position that you could have. And going into game three, we've got really nice fixture swings for Spurs and for Chelsea. Now, obviously, Chelsea don't really have a forward option at the moment, but Spurs do, obviously, with Harry Kane. So you could be going in, if you've got budget, you could free up elsewhere. You could look to have a really powerful front three of Haaland, Kane and Jesus. As Ian's already said, even Tony looks like a fantastic option. So you could stick in with either Kane or Haaland, have that Jesus pick in there as your middle priced forward player, and then have someone like Tony or Mitrovic as your cheaper one. So many potential options there that you could go with. So it does present an opportunity, and you shouldn't necessarily see it as a huge curse if you've got a red carded player.
I'll be honest as well, going into that game, I kind of thought, if Diaz doesn't perform here, I'm going to get rid of him for the likes of Kulusevski. Yeah. However, yeah. Jules, now Nunes was sent off, Diaz kind of came to life, didn't he, when he left the pitch. So what impact do you think this will have on the likes of Diaz and Mo Salah and the rest of the Liverpool attack?
I don't know. It'd be very interesting. I mean, it's a hell of a game on Monday where United to start with Jota being injured as well. Of course, Salah and Diaz, you know, will start, and then we'll have to see who is the third man, if Firmino can come back, if you have to think a bit outside of the box, if your club to find someone else. I still struggle a little bit with Luis Diaz and his end product, I have to be honest here, but we saw it last season.
Did you not see that goal, Jules?
No, the goal is amazing, but he won't score goals like this every weekend, I tell you that, because, you know, the way he dribbled past all that, quite passive, let's be honest, Crystal Palace defence.
Jules, you realise if he has a good season, that clip is going to get played over and over again.
I've got an issue with his end products,
and he's just got 30 goals and assists.
Producer Danny, please clip that up right now in anticipation. And also, if he does well, it means my team's done well.
We won't forget.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point, because he's super talented, of course, and he's great. But sometimes in the box, he can lack a bit of efficiency or clinicality, if you want. And I think with the talent that he has, I expect him to have easily 15 goals and 10 assists in a season for Liverpool, for example. And last season, he was great after he arrived in January. But in the end, the goals and assist stats compared to the underlying stats of expected goals and assists, etc., could have been better. Let's put it that way. So I still expect more from him. That's all I meant. But yeah, if you can sign him, I think he will have obviously become good.
He's just got high standards, hasn't he? What about the Liverpool defence, Ian? Because a lot of people did the Liverpool defensive double up at the start of the season. Oh, I'm guessing you're one of those people, the fact that you just winced there a little bit. Yeah. Is that correct?
It's confession time, isn't it? I did start the season with double Liverpool defence. I absolutely loved Andrew Robertson last season. He was the bright spark of a not very bright campaign for me in FPL. Sticking with him rather than jumping onto Jota just before Christmas and riding the ride of Robertson all the way through to the end of the season was great for me. So I thought, right, definitely in game week one. And as we head into game week three, there's no Andrew Robertson.
Ooh, so that's one of your transfers. What's the thinking there? What made you do that?
I had to get Reece James was the main reason in my mind, just because of how good Chelsea's fixtures are coming up. I'll talk a bit more about that later on in the podcast when we talk about transfers. I think he's as close to a must-own at the moment as it gets, really, in defence, considering the way he's started, considering the fixtures that are coming for Chelsea as well. And just for Robertson, Liverpool have not looked brilliant defensively compared to how they've been last year. There's obviously some uncertainty about exactly who's going to be okay to partner Virgil van Dijk over the next few weeks. But mainly with Robertson, he's just not looked as creative. He's not created a chance yet this season in the first two game weeks. And of course, last year, when he was so consistent, it was clean sheets he was getting, but he was also getting forward a lot. He was getting into some brilliant positions. He was taking set pieces and he was extremely creative. So I don't think that's the end of my season with Andrew Robertson by any stretch, because like I said, I really liked owning him last year and I think I will get him back. But just for the minute, I wanted the money as well to upgrade in midfield. So unfortunately, he was the one who left my team.
It does make total sense, doesn't it really, Sam? Because those Chelsea fixtures that Ian talked about, Leeds, Leicester, Southampton, West Ham, Fulham, then they've got Liverpool, then it's Crystal Palace, Wolves, Aston Villa, Brentford. That's pretty much as nice a run as you could almost get, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. The Chelsea fixtures have taken a massive swing for the better. And when you're thinking about how to invest in Chelsea, it is quite difficult in the other attacking areas of the pitch because they're not really performing necessarily as we would want, maybe because they haven't got that definite number nine up there in that kind of striker spot. But the defenders, and again, Spurs in the London derby, I thought Cucurella on the other side had an absolutely outstanding game. Now with him, you maybe get some rotation risk around Chilwell, but you look at James on the other side, we saw that even though the clean sheet didn't stick against Spurs, he still got attacking returns in that game, and it was a well-taken goal that he put away. So for me, I'm looking at that Chelsea defence thinking, yeah, I really kind of do need to find a way in there.
Another factor for me as well, James is over 40% owned. So when that goal went in last weekend, that really killed my rank. So I also, another way to change of playing the game this season is just taking into account a little bit more early on exactly what the percentage ownership is of these players as well. For anyone who's new to FPL, if you have a look on the website on the player profiles, it says TSB, team selected by, and that tells you how many people in the game or what percentage of the game own a player. And if that starts getting anywhere towards 50%, like Reece James at the moment, if you don't own him and he does something good, then obviously that's really going to harm you. The flip side of that is that if he doesn't do something good and you've got an alternative who's not as well owned, who does something better, you're going to have a massive jump. But I feel like I can be aggressive with transfers, but maybe a little bit more conservative with thinking about team selected by. So for me, that's why another reason why I wanted Reece James, because at over 40%, every point he's getting is really going to harm you.
When you have a look at his underlying stats for that game against Spurs and in game week one as well, he has been by far kind of the most stand-up pick in that Chelsea team. He's had more successful passes in the final third than anybody else. He's put in more crosses than any other Chelsea player. So he's in the right places to be getting those assist points. And then, of course, we know that Reece James has that goal threat as well. He's had four attempts on goal so far this season. Only Havertz and Sterling have had more in that time at Chelsea. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds. You're getting that attacking Chelsea threat without having to invest in a Chelsea attacker who are one, more expensive, and two, difficult to know which one to go with. But you're also getting a good defensive option, because those fixtures that you reeled out earlier, Kelly, look set for clean sheets. So we get some clean sheets in there, you're going to get some points, but you're also likely to get bonus points from Reece James because of the passes completed, the crosses that he's putting in. All of that stuff is going to count in his bonus point tally, and therefore we're likely more additional points too.
It was a question I posed in one of our pre-season pods, Jules. Someone said, oh, but he does move to play as one of the three centre-backs when Chelsea change formation. And I flipped that on its head and said, the way I see that is it makes him more rotation-proof. I know potentially it limits his points potential a bit, but is which way do you view that argument?
I don't think it's an issue at all. I agree to everything Ian and Sam just said about Reece James. I think he's a must-have right now. And even when he plays as a centre-back, like we saw against Spurs, he was very much a hybrid, back three to back four, Loftus-Cheek playing not really as a wing-back, but more between the lines. And then James still had, certainly when Chelsea had the ball, which was quite a lot of time, had a lot of freedom, really, to go forwards. The goal came when he had moved back to right wing back, to be fair, but still, even before that. I think he might play as a right centre back in those big, big games. I don't expect him, for example, against Leeds at the weekend, to play as a centre back. He will play as a right wing back, I think, and as Piliqueta, for example, will come in as a centre back. So it's not worries me at all. And then, especially if someone like Wesley Fofana comes, or if they sign another centre-back, then Reece James would be locked in at right wing-back anyway.
What did you think about Cucurella, Ian, in that game? Because he obviously got an assist and there's lots of excitement. And of course, that could impact Ben Chilwell's position in the team as well.
Yeah, he's definitely one to keep an eye on, no doubt. He's probably a player that I'd want a little bit more information on, but he's only 5.0. So, you know, he's a great option, especially if I'd done that, I could have gone even more crazy in the midfield and looked at someone like Wilfried Zaha, maybe, who's 7 million and is catching my eye at the minute. But yeah, Cucurella at left wing back, he put in, I think, 7 crosses against Tottenham, which shows his creativity. He got the assist for the first goal as well. Also with Cucurella, like Reece James, there's an option to play him at left centre back for Thomas Tuchel. So it'll be interesting to see just how much he's used as a left wing back or a left centre back. Of course, there's the Ben Chilwell factor, which will come into play. Doesn't sound like he's going to be ready straight away to be able to start. I think he had some minutes maybe in the under-23s this week. But when a team spends £62 million on a player, I think the manager's going to find a way to get him into the side. He was on some set pieces as well, Cucurella, so that's another thing to keep an eye on. If he's got multiple routes to points with creativity, with clean sheets at 5 million in a Chelsea team, we've got great fixtures, like we said, it might even be an option to double up on the defence, considering that the attacking options are a little trickier at the minute. But I definitely want a little bit more information before jumping on the Cucurella train.
A little trickier, that's probably a good way of referring to the Chelsea attacking players at the moment, isn't it? Sam Mason Mount is their most owned attacker, but he's still got a less than 10% ownership. No returns for him so far. Is it simply at the moment just avoid there's better options at their price points in the game?
Yeah, absolutely it is for me. I think, you know, I keep looking quite longingly at Chelsea. And obviously, I watched that game against Spurs very intently at the weekend. But I was watching it thinking, where's the Chelsea spark going forward that I can early invest in? Because as an FPL owner, I want to get on board with these Chelsea players as quickly as possible for these nice fixtures. And it definitely felt like it was the defenders rather than the attackers that I was going to be able to do that in. I'm looking at Mason Mount thinking, well, at 8 million, on the other side, I've got Kulusevski I could go with. Foden is performing well when we look at Manchester City. So there's other players in that category. Of course, there's Saka at Arsenal as well. And then you've got to go up even further in price to get to Sterling. And that feels like a jump too far because there's so many good options elsewhere on the pitch, particularly in the forward line. So until Chelsea either sign an out-and-out forward that I want to invest in, or one of those midfielders really stands up, investing in Reece James feels like the best route to the point in those Chelsea fixtures that we've got coming up.
Okay, so there was plenty we learned about Chelsea in that game at Stamford Bridge. What else did we learn in that game, other than the fact that Thomas Tuchel and Antonio Conte, there's no love lost between those two? And of course, the fact it was a brilliant game. What did we learn about Spurs from that one? Because of course, Jules, we knew it was going to happen, didn't we? I think even you said it, Harry Kane will score. The people that sell him will regret it. I was one of those. Sam was one of those. I'm sure there was thousands of other managers around the world who were one of those. Was he back to his best?
I didn't think he had that great game. He missed a big chance earlier on that he should have really buried. And then I loved, did you see in his celebration when he looked at the camera and said, Sam Bonfield, this is for you. Did you see or not? Because I could read on his lip. I'm sure he said that. This is, you should not have sold him. I told you.
Oh, Jules. But do you know something? For me as a Spurs fan, at that moment when we equalised, I didn't care that it was Kane. There's that element that comes to it. But oh my goodness. I knew it was coming as well. I just knew that in selling Harry Kane this week, he'd go, I'm going to punish you for that because you should have stayed loyal. And I definitely should have done.
But what was interesting, I think, is obviously the substitution and the Richarlison coming on that changed the dynamics only for Spurs. And I think kind of helped Harry Kane in a way. And I think to have that option now for Conte, which was not there last season, they had other options, but not one like Richarlison, I think could help Kane going forward in the season in a game where things are not looking great for Spurs maybe. Then Richarlison can come on and suddenly Kane has support with not just Richarlison, but still Son and Kulusevski or someone else. But I think that will help him scoring those late goals like the one we saw at Stamford Bridge. So, I was happy that he scored. I agree with Sam as well that goal was coming. And it was good for his confidence because we keep saying that he never scores in August. Well, now he scored in August.
Okay, so Sam, you don't have Harry Kane. I feel like we just need to keep saying it just to make it real. I know it sounds weird, doesn't it? Sam Bonfield.
Yeah. You're trying to make me cry, guys.
Harry Kane in FPL. Should we just talk about the Spurs fixtures quickly as well? Because they're pretty good, Sam, not to have him. Wolves,
it's horrible,
Forest,
Kenny.
West Ham, Fulham, then Man City.
That's
Leicester,
five goals,
then
easy.
Arsenal.
Six,
Brighton,
maybe.
Everton,
seven,
then Manchester
eight,
United.
Nine.
Who'd sell him for those fixtures?
Oh, guys, come on. Now, look. When I sold him last week, I said to you, didn't I, that he was going to punish me. I knew it was going to come, but I also didn't. I felt Haaland against Bournemouth was a player that I didn't want to go without. Now, as it happened, I would have been better sticking with Kane. Now I have a dilemma because do I stick with Haaland? City still have really nice fixtures, so investing in him feels wise. Do I move him back to Kane again? That feels like I'm just yo-yoing points and missing them because we've already seen that I've missed out on this points haul from Harry Kane this week. If I yo-yo them back again, there's a chance I miss out again. Do I go somewhere else in the Spurs team and invest there? It's the early kickoff against Wolves. Spurs actually don't have that great a record against Wolves. When I was looking at Kane and Sam's underlying stats against Wolves, they aren't great. They don't regularly return against them. So obviously I'm hoping for a change of fortune there, but I'm kind of looking at Kane going, oh, I really want you, but it feels like a wild card and needs to happen in order to be able to fund the really expensive premiums because there's no way I'm getting rid of Jesus at the moment. So I'm going to have a front three of Haaland, Kane and Jesus. That probably means I've got to sell Salah. This is a wild card issue. So now I'm looking at the Spurs midfield and thinking, well, how do I get in there? Well, of course, the only way to get to Son is if I sell Salah. But I have got Kulusevski as an option. And I did like what Conte was doing. As we were moving the system around against Chelsea to get that win, we were seeing lots of changes in the way that Spurs were playing. Actually, Kulusevski, for me, was the one that stood out. Although he didn't get anything in that game in terms of attacking returns, he wasn't subbed. He got 23 passes in the final third, which is more than anybody else. He created three chances to put in four crosses. He's top across the Spurs team so far this season for expected assists. So what is that telling me? It's telling me that there's a nice cheap way into the Spurs attack that doesn't mean spending either 11.4 or 12 million on Son and Kane. So I am looking at Kulusevski thinking, well, maybe this is the route that I take because him alongside those Spurs wingbacks, there's some value there. And it means that as FPL managers, we can get there without necessarily having to rip up the rest of our teams to do it. Although, of course, I would really like to have Harry Kane back.
Okay, so Sam's found a way around it. And the Spurs wingbacks are interesting, aren't they, Ian? We knew at some point under Antonio Conte, we were all going to be desperate for his wingbacks. And we've seen it in the opening two game weeks. They're still a huge part of the way his side play.
Yeah, that's right. One goal and three assists between them in these first two game weeks, which shows you just how integral they are to the way that Tottenham play. I'm caught between two things with the Spurs wingbacks. I'm either just going to ignore them all season and not have the headache, or I'm literally going to pull my hair out over them week after week after week because I knew that they wouldn't last 90 minutes. And so far, none of them have. They've all been subbed off before the end of the game, although Emerson Royale's been quite late in the match, but maybe that says a bit about Matt Doherty's fitness at the minute. The thing is, I feel like Doherty and Perisic are the first choice too, but they haven't started either of the matches yet. So you're waiting for them to come in. Perisic has looked closer, I think, to playing now. And obviously having that impact off the bench against Chelsea means that he could well start against Wolves this week. And if you own him, don't sell him. I think he's definitely one to keep hold of for the moment. But Conte said after the match that he's not the Perisic that he knows. That was his quote, which suggests that he's not quite up to full fitness after having a knock in pre-season. But they're not badly priced either, are they? He's the most expensive of the bunch at 5.4, but Doherty's 4.9. When he comes into the team, he could well be a great option. Emerson Royale got 2 assists against Southampton. He's only 5 million. Of course, Ryan Sessegnon got the goal, and he's only 4.5 million. But I think he is obviously the most uncertain of the four, because he's barely even lasted 60 minutes. And the last thing you want is a Spurs defender who is on for a clean sheet and gets subbed at 57 minutes like he did against Chelsea, although he wasn't on for a clean sheet in that game, but you take my point. So you can tell I'm already wrestling with it. Yeah, my head's all over the place.
I was going to say, do we have a conclusion?
Yeah, I'm a bit lost.
Well, there isn't one. That's the point.
I guess the other thing is you could go with a centre-back, couldn't you? You could just go, okay, I want to invest in the Spurs defence because the fixtures are nice. These guys are giving me a headache because there's multiple routes that Conte could take. But if you look in the middle part of the pitch, you know, you've got players like Ben Davis, like Eric Dier, who have some, and I say that tentatively, some attacking threat, not very much, but they will likely get those clean sheets because they're likely to play and get the full minutes in those games. So I guess if you are risk averse and you don't want to spend the whole season pulling your hair out, Ian, then maybe going with one of those guys is better than going with one of the
But they're so exciting, aren't they? That's
I know.
The thing.
Yeah,
they're
no.
so exciting. And I mean, you're talking about some and using your fingers to sort of portray exactly how little some attacking threat that the others have got. They're just going to be great options. But I feel like of everything in FPL so far, the change in rule to 5 subs in the Premier League has affected the Spurs wing-backs more than anything in my mind anyway. Perhaps I've just not given as much thought to other things because that would be impossible.
And Perisic takes the corners from the all-in swingers, right foot and then left foot, which just that in itself is so cool. He deserves
to We should have him for that, shouldn't we, Jules?
Yeah,
to be fair.
Exactly. Yeah. That's so cool.
So basically, I think my takeaway from that is Perisic is quite cool that he takes those corners, but we don't really know other than that still at this stage what wing-backs to bring in.
Do you know, I'll make it simple. When he's in the team, when he's nailed down his spot and he's not coming on for half an hour for Ryan Sessegnon or whatever, I think he's the one to own and I think he'll be the one that we all get at some point. But I don't know when that point will be. And
okay,
I don't
so
feel like
it might
it's
be
now.
Soon. I think it'll be soon. I think
it
we'll
feels
start
like it
to
could
see
be soon.
The change coming.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, well, watch this space. And as we said, some nice fixtures for Spurs for you to hopefully take advantage of in the coming weeks. Now, if
I
we
feel
do want
better
to bring
now
in...
for getting that off my chest, I have to say. I feel looser.
Bear in mind this, I really hope that the Premier League pick that clip to clip up because you were getting redder and redder and more irate and more irate. And I was like... I feel like your wife or your little girl needs to come in and just check her dad's okay.
Give
me
a hug.
Well, he's having a sip of water now.
Well.
He's
all right.
Calm?
I'm okay.
He's all right. He's all right. Good. Gosh, what are we doing? He's never going to want to come on again. Talking there about Spurs and Chelsea, plenty that we've learned about them, namely that they've got good fixtures coming up. So if we do want to bring in players from both of those sides, of course, we're going to have to get rid of a few. I said before I was thinking of getting rid of Luis Diaz. My planned transfer for this week was Luis Diaz to Dejan Kulusevski. I'm now going to wait another week because Diaz, I think, has earned the right, despite what Jules has said, to stay in my team, especially given the fact they have Manchester United on Monday. Ian, I'm sorry to come to you again just when you've calmed down, but we are needing to move players on. I need to now get Marcus Rashford out of my team ASAP. You cover Manchester United regularly.
Yeah.
FPL managers are surely going to be avoiding them like crazy now. What's going on with them?
Yeah, I think you do have to avoid them for the time being until things settle down and we see some sort of rhythm. I think there's going to be a lot done in the transfer market for Manchester United between now and the end of the window as well. I did a podcast yesterday and I counted something like 24 footballers who'd been linked with a move to Manchester United in just the last 48 hours. That's how crazy it is at the minute. Wow. So we could have well have a whole new range of options from United by the time that September comes around. They have been really poor in the first two matches. I don't think there's any doubt about that, whether that's in attack or in defence. At the minute, the top goal scorer is Alexis McAllister after two matches. So that tells you everything you need to know about the way they're functioning at the moment. I wouldn't buy and I would sell. I think it's as simple as that. Until we see United settle under the new boss, until we see all the craziness at the start of this season and the poor performances change, then I just don't think they're a team to go anywhere near in FPL.
Sam, have you still got Marcus Rashford like me?
No, I sold him at the beginning of the week, Kelly. Honestly, I watched that game.
Who would keep Marcus Rashford, to be honest?
because to get rid of him and do what I wanted to do, I'd have had to take a minus four. And okay. Ian's new season resolution might have been to be more aggressive. Mine was not to take points hits. But to be honest, having seen he's now gone down to 6.3, I'm wishing I'd done it. But now I'm like, well, I can't do it now.
If United can't raise their game under all this circumstance for this particular match, they're never going to do it, are they, in fairness? Although I think I might have said that in the build-up to the Liverpool games last season for United, and look how that worked out. But stranger things have happened, certainly.
The thing is for me, looking at this Brentford game last weekend, was I saw nothing from Manchester United. Like, I watched it, and I was really watching it with the Rashford focus in mind, because obviously he's a player that I own. He was a good differential, and I was thinking, if he can get something from me in that game, that's going to give me a nice little boost in terms of overall rank. It's going to bring up that green arrow. That'll be lovely. But there was nothing from Manchester United in that game. In fact, as the game went on, their heads went even more. And I'm looking ahead to this game on Monday thinking, Liverpool haven't exactly had a great start to the season, but they really need to up their game. And Klopp is going to go into that one wanting some real drive and some fight from them. And Liverpool have the players to do that. Whereas Manchester United at the minute, I'm just not sure that they've got the personnel doing the right things at the right time, working together well enough that they're going to do it. So for me, Rashford was an easy sell. It ruined all of my other plans I had for this week, which was let's get in Kulusevski because that's going to be really important. But for me, it was like, I can't stomach this guy playing him on my pitch every week, getting 1 point and then dropping my team value down, which is going to prevent me from getting somebody else that I also really want. So Rashford for me, sadly, given I highlighted him as the guy that I thought would have the best season and would be the best differential in pre-season, I really need him to show up in the next few weeks. But right now, I think you can't invest.
If this was therapy for Ian before, it feels like therapy for me. Why on earth didn't I sell Marcus Rashford at the beginning of the week?
Like, no, you like him. We understand that. You know, you like him.
No, I just don't want to take minus fours.
He scored goals against Liverpool in the past before, Kelly. You never know.
Keep him.
You never know.
The whole season, actually. Keep him. Show him faith. You know, he needs a bit of love.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about another team. Basically, the conclusion from that bit, we might not have had a conclusion about Spurs, but we certainly have one about United. Whatever you do, don't invest. And unlike me, do sell. What about Newcastle defence, Jules? Because we were talking before, and the whole point of me bringing up these type of teams is to say, if we are going to invest in Spurs and Chelsea, and we want all these premiums, we're trying to find value, or in Manchester United's case, where there isn't value elsewhere. The Newcastle defence, there appears to be some good value.
Yeah, there is. And Sam mentioned Trippier earlier on. We saw Fabian Schär scoring, obviously, in Get Wing 1, pretty special goal as well. There's Nick Pope in goal, who was fantastic again at the weekend. And I mean, Eddie Howe spoke so well about him. He gets you point in the game anyway. So it's interesting. The problem is that they play City this weekend. So maybe if you want a defensive asset from Newcastle, just wait that the Haaland and City sort of tornado has come in town. See how that goes, because that could be a really good game for Newcastle and give them even more confidence and momentum. And then you can invest into their defensive assets. But I would not do it before a City game, I have to be honest.
Okay, so potentially hold fire on Newcastle defence, despite the fact they've had a good start to the season. Should also say, as well as Man City in game week 3, it is Liverpool in game week 5 as well. If we are moving Trippier on, Sam, should we be going big at the back? It feels like we need to go big up front at the moment as well. It feels like we need to go big everywhere. As you can tell, my head's a bit muddled, mainly because of the Marcus Rashford situation.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think in seasons gone by, and particularly last season, it was, shall we go big at the back and in midfield? And let's just strip all of the budget out of the forward line. This year, it feels very much to me at the moment like, should we go big at the back and big up top and take the money out of the midfielder spots? Because although KDB is performing well, we're not really seeing enough from Son yet. Arguably, we're not really seeing enough from Salah yet, particularly when you compare them.
I wondered if you were going to go there.
I know, Kelly.
And that's like you did with Kane.
Oh,
you know.
Gosh, Jules. Can't sell him as well. Can you imagine? But there is a part of me that is thinking in the back of my mind, it's that sort of slightly naughty angel that sits on your shoulder kind of going,
it's a wizard, isn't it?
Sell Salah. Cell seller, yeah, it's definitely a Lego wizard. But I think for me, I'm looking at that thinking, on wildcard, there is a place here where I go, actually, maybe I have Luis Diaz in the middle. Maybe I take the Salah money and I pop it up top and I have this really powerful front three where I've got Kane and I've got Haaland and I've got Jesus. And I take the rest of that money and I pop it in the back line and I'll have players like Trent and Cancelo and Reece James and maybe one of the Spurs wing-backed Perisic if Ian's not going to put his hair out about it all season. But I think there is scope where we've got so many nice 8 million players and lower in those midfield positions that this year it does feel like we could be having a change of system and a change of structure for FPL managers where rather than having all the budget in midfield, we actually want to spread that and put that money in the forward line as well.
That's what you've done, isn't it, Jules? You went big with the threemium. Yep. You've got Haaland, Kane and Jesus. Are you quite happy with your team structure now? Because I know a lot of people, when they were commenting on your team and other teams that were set up like yours, were saying, oh, but the rest of your team's going to suffer. It doesn't look like it's suffered in the opening couple of weeks.
No, although it's light in midfield, which is exactly what Sam just said. Apart from Salah, the rest, you know, is Neto that hasn't really started the season as well as we thought he could. And then Bailey, obviously, that we mentioned before. And then the Declan Rice that I have got because I needed a 5 million option. So this is
him against Forest, did you?
No, he was not there. But he was on the bench. But still, you know, it is a bit of a dilemma that you have to choose and decide. But then when I see the form Jesus is in, plus Haaland and Kane, I don't have any regrets for now.
Ian, tell us a little bit more about your team structure then, because obviously we know pretty well now how Sam and Jules' team set up. You've mentioned a few players you've had. Did you go with the threemium strategy or who did you go big on?
No. I did 4-4-2. So originally my plan was to double up on the Liverpool and City defences as the strongest defences traditionally in the league. As I've said before, that's changed now because I brought in Reece James this week for Andrew Robertson. I was desperate to get an 8 million midfielder slot for all the reasons that we've discussed in this podcast. I feel like that is going to be a really key position this season and swapping and changing around those 8 million players is going to be an interesting choice. In the end, I went for Mason Mount at the start of the season. And obviously, he's not had the best two game weeks, but like we talked about, Chelsea's fixtures look great. So I'm going to show a little bit of patience with Mount, I think, and just see how that one plays out. Now I've got rid of Robertson, though. Of course, that does give me the option of bringing in Luis Diaz as well, if he does hit the ground running without Darwin there. And he does look better than Jules thinks he is. I think that's definitely...
I didn't say that.
Well, you did. So,
Park Central.
The Laurent Laurie is reversing. Beep, beep, beep. So 4-4-2, Haaland and Jesus up front. And actually, if I can just talk about Erling Haaland for a minute, I was at the City game working as a pitchside reporter against Bournemouth. And a lot was made of the fact that he had 8 touches and only 2 successful passes in the game. But there was nothing about that match that made me want to sell him, to be honest. He got himself into some brilliant positions. I've rarely seen an attacker just look like he's going to get on the end of everything like Haaland does. He's following in every shot. He's in great positions in the middle when there's crosses coming in. He was whiskers away from finding his foot on the end of a couple of those. Phil Foden should have squared it to him. I don't even think we'd even be doubting Erling Haaland if that had happened and he'd scored there. He had a chance that he put just wide just before he was taken off as well. So, Harry Kane's a great option, of course, Sam. But I think if you've got Erling Haaland, I don't think I'd be quick to swap to the other side. The one thing about that is that against Bournemouth, it looked like they had a really sort of stringent plan to look after him. I asked Chris Meppham about it after the game as well, and he spoke a lot about the different tactics that they had to try and look after him and keep him quiet. And I think that's intriguing because if teams do look to copy that, buy Kevin De Bruyne. Literally buy Kevin De Bruyne because he had the freedom of the Etihad against Bournemouth. He was absolutely brilliant and he looked like a brilliant FPL asset as well. So that's definitely a situation that I'm going to keep a close eye on because if teams are really going to concentrate on stopping Haaland, they forgot that City's best player is going to absolutely run riot. So Haaland's still adapting. It's still early for him in the Premier League, but he's looked great. I'd keep him for the minute, but that's definitely a situation that I'm going to keep a close eye on because KDB, he's got a higher BPS than anyone in the game in the first two game weeks. 11 crosses, 4 shots. Only Gabriel Jesus, Rodrigo and Cristiano Ronaldo have had more. He could be an excellent one to jump on. And if you are thinking of getting rid of Mohamed Salah at any point, it's probably an easy switch to KDB as well. So definitely keep an eye on that.
What about Rashford to De Bruyne? You think I can get there? I need to find a few million.
A little bit of money.
We'll get there, yeah.
That's ambitious, yeah.
Well, that's the transfer I'd like to do. Let's confirm your guys' transfers then. Jules, what have you done? You've been quite coy today about your team.
Secret squirrel.
No, so much. I want Rodrigo from Leeds. The stat that Ian just said is obviously a really good one. And I think Leeds are going to play very attacking football overall. And now with Patrick Bamford out again and that injury, I think there's more freedom. I think Rodrigo would be the boss of that team. I know it's the Chelsea game this weekend, but after that, the fixtures are really good for Leeds United. They will concede goals, no doubt, but they will also score, I think, quite a few. So Rodrigo started the season so well. And I think he just needed that extra bit of confidence at times. We've seen him. He's a very talented player, but I think maybe confidence-wise, there was always a bit of an issue there. And now he started so well that I'm really tempted to bring him on for Neto, for example, who, again, I've been quite disappointed with. And Wolves have a tough game against Spurs this weekend. And yeah, I'm not too keen on Neto anymore.
Okay, so potentially Rodrigo for Neto. What about you, yeah. Sam?
Do you know, I love the Rodrigo pick. He's a player that I really wanted to do this week, but I've got so many issues with my team.
Done yours, haven't you?
I've done two. Yeah, I've done two. I took a -4 because I had so many issues going on that I was like, and then players dropping in price. And for me, the key in this early part of the season is maintaining team value. I don't want to be in a situation. Yeah, sorry, Kelly, but for me, it's really important right now. I just don't want to be in a position where in 2 weeks' time, there's a player that really starts banging and he's gone up like Rodrigo has, and I can't afford to get to him because I've held on to Marcus Rashford. Sorry to bring up Rashford again. So I sold Rashford this week and I went with a player that was also doing the rise in price thing and went Martinelli, because that was a big mistake that I made at the beginning of the season. It was a very fine line decision early on between going with Rashford and going with Martinelli. And actually, having spent time with you two recording the pre-season pod, I very nearly made that switch because Jules was waxing lyrical about Arsenal and Martinelli, and I was like, oh, maybe I should go there instead. But having had Rashford all pre-season, I was like, I can't change now because I'm just going to massively regret it, aren't I? But I've changed it now. And I was like, 2 weeks in, Rashford's doing nothing, Arsenal look great, Martinelli's doing fantastic. He's no rotation risk, which is what I worried he might be. So I've done that one already. And then, like Ian was saying, I think Reece James is really important for the next few weeks. And Matt Cash was dropping in price and has a flag on him. So I did cash to James as well.
I don't say thank you to Jules very often on this podcast, but I will admit I do listen to the both of you. I listen to you, Sam, and have Marcus Rashford. I'm not so thankful for that. I have Gabriel Martinelli, and I've had him from the start. So, Jules, for the one and only time
this
season, thank you.
Anytime.
Thank you very much. Ian, that's enough of that. Your transfers then. So we know one of them.
Yeah.
You've done Andy Robertson to Reece James. Did you say you've done another?
Yeah, I had to get rid of Leon Bailey. I knew he was a mistake when I got him in my pre-season draft, but at 5 million, I thought I could take the risk and just see how it worked out. So another reason to downgrade Andrew Robertson to Reece James was to free up the money, the million, that allowed me to upgrade Bailey to Pascal Gross. Now, he is not a player that I ever thought I'd be getting
Ian,
in this
he's
week.
The one, he's the kind of player that I always get every season and I just miss his good run. And then he got Brighton go on one of their runs where they don't
score.
Well,
he might have already had it, in fairness.
he could already have had
his good run already. He's looked great. He's looked really good. And not only has he looked good, but the stats back it up as well. I mean, watch football, guys. Have a look at matches. Watch players. Don't just look at stats. Don't just look at the tips that you give and make your own mind up about how these players look. I've said it about Erling Haaland. Sam said it before about Kulusevski as well. Pascal Gross has caught the eye for me as well. And then having a look at the stats as well, he's the third highest for expected goal involvement in this season. He's had 4 shots, 3 inside the box. Only Haaland and Darwin have had more big chances this season. He could well be on penalties for Brighton. We don't know that yet. Alexis McAllister took the last one for them, but he's an option, definitely. It seems like it's between those two reading into Brighton's penalty takers. Gross is on set pieces as well. And that position that he's finding on the right-hand side in Brighton's attack. And bearing in mind, Brighton have started the season bright and the fixtures look bright, so they could well get brighter.
Really good fixtures.
He could be a great option. And he's only 5.6, so I thought, why not? Let's push the boat out. Let's get Pascal Gross in. And West Ham away, Leeds at home, Fulham away, Leicester at home, Bournemouth away, Crystal Palace at home. Let's see what he can do.
How many times did you use the word bright there to describe Brighton?
I was sort of like was quite impressive. Making it a thing.
It was a pun
then,
that went a bit far.
Yeah, it did really. It ended up not being very bright at all. So, yeah.
Finally, let's end on captains. I don't know who I'm going to captain this weekend, actually. Hopefully you guys can help me. I'll probably be listening to Jules after the Martinelli pick. Go on, Jules.
So you know what? The funniest thing is I had Gabriel Jesus as my captain until literally, again, the last minute where I changed and I captain Haaland, which was not bad because I didn't want to captain Kane because I didn't want to jinx him. That's my tactics. So it was between Salah, Jesus or Haaland. And I had Jesus right until the end and then I changed to Haaland. I know that was painful. That was really painful. And being at the Emirates watching the Gabriel Jesus show, which was great, but I was like, you are kidding me.
Did
and
you then see him when he celebrated Jules? He said, Jules, that was the end of the captain.
I saw. I did apologize to him, to be fair, after the game. But yeah, so I'm really tempted by Gabriel Jesus' captaincy this week.
You're going back to him, aren't you? You're going groveling back saying, Gabriel, please do it for me this week. Yeah, Bournemouth away this weekend for Arsenal. But Bournemouth did manage to stop Haaland last weekend and they could do the same with Jesus. Mm. But then I'm worried about Newcastle stopping Haaland. I don't know what to think.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it, this week? Because you felt like it was going to be Haaland and Salah most weeks. I think if you've got Harry Kane, the Wolves fixture probably looks decent. Although, of course, like Sam said before, the record against Wolves and Kane's record against Wolves isn't brilliant. City Newcastle is intriguing to me. Someone at City said to me last week, we always do well against Eddie Howe teams. And I had a look at it. So last season, City beat Newcastle 5-0 and 4-0. And over the course of Howe's Premier League career, he's taken on City 12 times and lost 12 times and conceded 39 goals. So that's an average of 3 a game.
Wow.
Of course, a lot of those matches were for Bournemouth as opposed to for Newcastle. But 5-0 and 4-0 last season is quite something. They've looked better defensively, of course. The signing of Sven Botman, the signing of Kieran Trippier, now he's going to play more. And also, of course, Nick Pope has improved them. But that was an interesting, intriguing start in terms of the captaincy choice for me, finding that out. But take your pick, really. Mohamed Salah, you could easily make a case for as well, given the way that Manchester United have started the season, given his recent record against United as well, which is absolutely brilliant. But that stat's just nagging away at me a little bit. 39 goals in 12 matches. Wow.
Sam, what about you? This is a really interesting... Last season, this section of the podcast was so quick. It was Mo Salah, Mo Salah, Mo Salah.
Mm.
But there's a bit of variance.
There is. And actually, the ones that you've talked about so far are the ones that I'm torn between. I like Jesus against Bournemouth, but I do think Bournemouth have got some good tactical nous and they can deal with threats. And we saw that against Manchester City with Haaland. I worry about Haaland against Newcastle because that Newcastle defence looks rock solid. Nick Pope massively improved the defence. He just looks so much better sitting in that Newcastle goal with those guys in front of him. So I'm not certain that Haaland gets an absolute hatful. Like, I know what you were saying about last season, but I do think Newcastle have come a long way
over
the course of this pre-season. Not sure about that. Then I'm looking at Liverpool. And up until sort of before the Monday night kickoff, I wasn't really thinking about captaining Salah this week. After the Nunez sending off, I'm now really thinking about captain and Salah because suddenly we're in a position where we're going to have Salah not being forced out wide necessarily by Nunez playing in that front number nine position. We're probably going to have a front three, I think, of Salah, obviously alongside Luis Diaz. And then maybe Carvalho gets his first start for Liverpool. So does that mean that Salah's going to be really attacking in the positions that we want? Probably, because we might see Luis Diaz up front, which is good for us, I think, Kelly, as Diaz owners. So I'm looking at his record against Manchester United last season. I'm looking at the way Liverpool will need a bounce from these opening two fixtures of the season. And I'm looking at the way that Salah's probably sitting in a more traditional Salah role that we maybe saw of him last season when it was Salah and Mane and Diaz playing together, or Salah, Mane and Jota playing together. I think this might be the week where Mo Salah gets the armband for me. Tight call between the three of them, but I think I'm going to go with Salah.
Of course, we could have three different captains and I'll just copy one of you. So three different captains on this week's podcast. Doesn't happen too often. Well, guys, thank you so much for being with us, Sam. Thanks for your commitment being on holiday doing the podcast. Where are you off to today?
I'm off to build some Lego now, going to the Lego house. Enough of the roller coasters in the last couple of days. So now we're going to go and do some Lego building. Very exciting.
And you don't even have to worry about your team because, unlike me, you've already done your transfers. Very smart indeed. Ian, thanks for coming along. Feel like you've had a bit of therapy?
Yeah, I feel better. Definitely. Thank you.
That's what we're here for.
Big smile as always with you, Jules. Where are you this weekend?
I am in France. I've got the weekend off, so we're going back to see my newborn niece. Yeah. So.
Oh, congratulations. Well, enjoy that. Enjoy the rest of your holiday, Sam. That is all from us on this week's FPL pod. A reminder of your deadline. We haven't actually told you that so far. It's 11 a.m. on Saturday. That's UK time, so do not miss it. And remember, fantasy.premierleague.com is where you need to head to sort your teams in the meantime. And as well as us every Thursday, don't forget to check in with the Off the Bench podcast on Tuesday next week to dissect everything from Game Week 3. The best of luck, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.